Welcome to the Inside Carolina Podcast. It is the day after. With the day after brings the crew, first time crew this year. Certainly not the show we planned on recording. Johnny T-Shirt is our sponsor, and also Blue Shark Vodka has teamed up with Inside Carolina. We'll talk about them in a little bit. But the day after brings Buck Sanders and Jason Staples. And gentlemen, I'll get it out of the way early. I'm tired. It has been a long 24 hours. Fun time in Blacksburg with some great people, all except the three and a half hours that the clock was running on the Tar Heels. Buck, I'll open with you first. We're going to break this down as best as possible, and I don't want it to be a hot take filled show, but the loss is not totally surprising. I've been around long enough to see these games plenty. It's how Carolina lost Friday night in Blacksburg. What'd you think?
Well, I think you have a very good point in terms of it was difficult not to get the impression that Virginia Tech was the better prepared team. They were just better prepared. And that's coaching, players, the whole nine yards. When Virginia Tech went outside of their comfort zone and did some things differently than you typically expect a Fuente-coached Virginia Tech team to do, when was the last time you saw Justin Fuente holding on to the ball to the last second before he snapped it? I mean, they played keep away. I don't think North Carolina was expecting that. They did some things defensively, offensively. They did some things differently that North Carolina wasn't prepared for and had no in-game answer for, at least not until the second half. They did make some adjustments in the second half, but Virginia Tech was just more prepared, and North Carolina's got to get better at that, being prepared if the other team throws you a curveball. You got to be ready for that, particularly if you're the more talented team. If you're the better team, in theory, you're going to should expect the other team to come at you a little differently and not play football on your terms. They're going to try to play them on their terms. It wasn't, as you said, Tommy, a shocking outcome. I expected to be a closer game than a lot of people did, but I expected the Tar Heels to win, but by single digits, and it turned out single digits the other way. I thought, contrary to Jason Staples' opinion, the crowd had an impact on this game. I think they fed the Virginia Tech team a lot of energy. And the North Carolina team fed the Virginia Tech crowd a lot of energy, too, because they kept Virginia Tech, you know, the score so close that nobody was leaving the stadium right up into the final minute. And so, yeah, all those things combined, I'm not shocked. I'm disappointed. I think every UNC fan would be disappointed this morning that things turned out the way they did. There's a lot more we can say about this, and I'm not going to try to take all the time about it. I probably could, but I'm just going to pass the stick to somebody else to carry the ball for a while, and we'll get through this one way or the other.
Indeed. You mentioned Georgia Tech there in a slip of the tongue, but it's not totally out of the realm. First quarter time of possession, Jason, this is what was shocking to me. And we debated whether or not you win the toss, you defer, you put your defense out there, whatever. Virginia Tech, 12 and a half minutes, Carolina, 2.5 minutes, first quarter. That sort of got Virginia Tech realizing they're going to be in this game. And more importantly, the crowd realizing that this is going to be their type of game. Let's talk a little bit briefly to start, or maybe not too briefly, is the preparedness, like Buck talked about. They simply had no answer early for what Virginia Tech was trying to do. And I don't think Virginia Tech was doing anything super special. They whipped Carolina up front on both sides of the ball. you can't win on the road against pretty much anybody if that happens. What'd you see, especially early, Jason?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing is that Carolina, particularly the Carolina offensive staff, but Carolina got out-coached in this game and out-prepared. I think that's absolutely right, what Buck said about that. I don't think the time of possession, I mean, I know the everybody always looks at that sort of thing and goes, oh, yeah, you know, time of possession. I don't think it matters. And that wasn't that big of a factor. Now, where that does matter is what you were saying, Buck, about the crowd having impact. The crowd has impact when you let them have impact by not making plays early in the game, right? You basically allow, you know, Joey Powell and I talked about this on the pregame radio broadcast, where, you know, what you have to do is you have to go out and basically shut the crowd up early on, that the crowd doesn't beat you. But what can happen is if you allow the opposing team to get early momentum, then that can sort of serve as a little bit of a force multiplier of that momentum. And I think it did that here, and it would in any opposing stadium. I mean, that's just the way that it is. And Carolina came out and got punched in the face. And, you know, I think Vip was right in his post game, although it wasn't Muhammad Ali that said that, it was Customato, but everybody has a plan until they get hit. And, you know, that is, they got hit. They got hit in the face early on and they didn't respond. And frankly, I'm not that surprised by that first drive. You're feeling things out. They've got a good plan for how to attack you and doing different things. And first drive or two of a season, you know, you're usually going to be kind of finding your feet, and you got a really young group on, you know, on that side of the ball. That's fine. But the offense didn't respond. And, you know, they went, I think, 3-and-out on that first drive. And so you compound that, you compound a long and successful opening drive with a 3-and-out, and then they're able to continue to get a little bit of success on the ground in the second drive. And it's not so much about the time of possession. It's about the fact that you're letting them move the ball while you're not moving the ball. It's real simple. And to me, again, there are a few things that just coming into this show, I've got my head kind of swimming in a lot of things. The first thing is, if you'd have told me pregame, Virginia Tech's going to score 17 points and they're going to be held to, 270 yards. Is that right?
96 total, I think. 296 yeah. total.
Yeah. So you're looking at, there you go. I'm 307. So they're going to be held. Carolina's going to hold Virginia Tech to 307 yards total. 17 points. Now that should have been 24 because of the drop in the red zone, or maybe 21. I don't remember. I think they did kick that field goal. So, and they're going to, and they're going to hold Virginia Tech to a total of 5.0 yards per play. So 5.0 yards per play, 17 points, 307 total yards. I'm looking at that and I'm saying, I will take that outcome every single time in this game. But if you'd have told me that Carolina is going to score 10 points and struggle to move the ball the entire game, it would have been hard to believe that given the Carolina that we've seen the last 2 years. And that, I mean, it was the inability to get anything generated on the offensive side that really was the difference in this game. I mean, I know, yeah, it was frustrating at times to watch the defense just kind of bend and bend and bend at different points and not get the kind of pressure that they wanted and that was discussed all offseason. Sure, a little bit of frustration there. But ultimately, the outcomes on that, they could have won the game with the performance that – and they should have won the game with the performance that they had on that side of the ball. On the offense, when you've got a Heisman Trophy contender coming into the season at quarterback, you got five returning starters, four of whom are on the field for that opener on the offensive line. You can't go out there and score 10 points. And you've got to be able to find ways to move the football. And they didn't do that. And I'll say one last thing. I'm kicking myself in terms of, you go back to our preseason podcast, in terms of projecting the schedule. And, you know, those of you who listen to this will remember I was looking for that third loss. And now it probably, you know, we'll talk about potential outcomes there. But I was looking like I'm searching for things, for games that I think are going to be a loss, because I felt like this was probably a 9-3 team. But I ended up kind of going back on that and, you know, okay, whatever. But I missed the most obvious one staring me right in the face, a road game opening weekend, adjusting to all the weapons lost on offense, you know, all of these different factors in play against a good team, and just never really, really considered. I mean, I my gut kind of said this is going to be a tough one, but never really considered that this would be what it was. And, you know, I think part of that is that I just didn't feel Virginia Tech was going to be quite as good as I think it looks like they're going to be this year. So I didn't consider that. And so I'm kind of kicking myself over that, but this looked like a team that lost four major contributors on the offense who are now, you know, getting NFL paychecks and hasn't figured out how to replace them.
A lot to unpack this entire show. A couple things. I mean, Carolina got a first down on that first drive to Josh Downs, I believe. And then it kind of shut down from there. My point about time of possession is not that it ultimately matters, especially with an offense that scores quickly, but I felt like Carolina started rushing a little bit, or Sam started rushing a little bit, and made plays that ended up giving the ball back to Virginia Tech more so than maybe if they had the ball a little longer. But I certainly concede to you that it's not that big a deal. But
he never looked comfortable in this game.
No, and that is the ultimate segue to my next point. But, okay, a couple things that I'm thinking watching this game. Javonte and Michael Carter are pretty damn good. And if that offensive line performance from yesterday is what those guys had to deal with during their career, then they're not just good, they're elite, beyond elite. But let's talk about the offensive line. If there's one thing that I think was the most shocking thing is that offensive line, and I don't want to call guys out, it is what it is, but everybody saw it. They were brutal at times against Virginia Tech. And Michael Barno made a lot of money last night going against that offensive line. But we talked about it off air. That is what's the most – I got nothing on how that could possibly happen with 3 years together, all veterans. Sure, the crowd's loud. Sure, it's all that. But just, wow, help me understand how that could happen.
It was compounded by the fact that the wide receivers could get no separation from Virginia Tech secondary, which Sam is going to try to make a play. He feels like that's his job, is to make a play. And with the receivers struggling to get any kind of separation, And I hope that Virginia Tech secondary is close to the best one that they'll face this year. Because if they face another one that good, they're going to be in big trouble. But the Tar Heels, Sam Howell in particular, he tended to hang on to the ball too long, which we know that he's done that in the past as well. And receivers can't get open, so he holds the ball longer. That puts more stress on the offensive line. They can't, you know, keep them out forever. And Sam Howell goes down. So I think it was a two-fold problem. One, and we'll talk on three-fold problem. I think we'll talk about more about this too, but even when they could get separation and did get separation, it was inexplicable the number of drops that they had as well. You know, guys like Garrett Walston, who, you know, I'm not trying to call Garrett out at all, but, you know, normally he catches everything.
Normally the ball's on his frame better. I mean, neither of the ones that were drops for him were easy. I mean, those were both very difficult catches because Sam didn't locate them.
Yeah. in any
that
event,
was a factor in this game. Sam was not as I'm going to step in here for a second. Howell, from the first throw of the game forward, that was that little RPO that they threw to Antoine Green. That first throw was high and a little bit toward the middle, you know, away from his frame. He just missed him. And then the same thing was true with the one that Walston was going on the little crosser. It was high and well outside the frame, and you're stretching your guy out. And, you know, those are tough catches. Now, should you come up with those catches if you're an elite? Absolutely. Those are catches you expect your guys to be able to make. But Sam missed some, and I'm not talking about when he was under pressure. These were throws where he wasn't under pressure. He did not throw it as well last night as what he has the last couple of years. He had a rough night, even when he was, and this is before the game got out of hand, and this was before the pressure got to him. He missed some throws that I can tell you right now, when he's looking at those today, he's kicking himself because he had opportunities and missed them. So there's your, and it really was a fourfold thing. There's three right there where it was a, you know, a confluence of problems, offensive line struggle, receivers, like you said, not getting separation. And then when they did, Sam not putting the ball on location like he has.
And on some occasions, though, the ball hit receivers right in the chest, right in the numbers, and they dropped it. So,
yeah, no, there were a few of those too. So,
we'll run out of fingers on our hands to count the reasons why here in a minute. But I think as far as the offensive line piece of it, I think that was complicated by the fact that Hal had to hang on to the ball so long because nobody could get open. Except for Downs.
And I completely agree. And one other thing, this is the third thing that I was thinking before, is one of the reasons that Howell ended up holding onto the ball in some of these cases that got and got pressure, some of these were RPOs. So he's putting the ball in the belly and reading his key and deciding to hold onto it and throw it with a glance route, which is one of those little longer slant routes behind the read key. And he's looking for that glance route and expecting to get that ball out. And Virginia Tech gamed him on a number of those where they had a very good sense of this was going to be an RPO with a glance on that side. And they would actually bring a player who is not the read key and undercut the glance. And that what was happening was there are a few times where Howell pulled the ball on the RPO to make the throw, and then went to make the throw and then realized, oh shoot, this is going to be a pick because they got a guy coming from the other side that's going to got his eyes over there and held onto the ball. And then the thing is, in an RPO, your offensive line is run blocking. So if you don't get that ball out right away, you're going to get smoked as a quarterback. So some of this was just flat out getting out schemed. And what was surprising to me was that the number of times that they went back to that well in a few cases after that had happened a couple times. And it's like, okay, look, at a certain point, they're sitting on what you're doing here and you got to change that. And they didn't. And there are a few places where I'm saying, you know, by the second half, I started talking to my TV, which is pretty rare. You know, I was, you know, going, you know, hand it off. Like, oh, come on, you missed your read again. You know, there are a few of these where they were not prepared for what they were seeing. And a few cases where they got out schemed and out prepared, and they didn't do a good enough job of adjusting to some of the things that were being done on the defensive side to take away some of those options.
It is I still think the offensive line got whipped up front.
Well, one other thing, by the way, about
not disagreeing about that, but
yeah, none of us are disagreeing.
There's a reason,
about that.
But there are other factors. But the bottom line is, if you can't block them, it doesn't matter. After
there's
that,
no excuse for how the offensive line did not play like they had 4 3-year starters out there. There's no question about that. That said, sack adjusted rush yardage average per carry. Any guesses on that?
It's like 6.5, wasn't it?
7.5.
Yeah.
But you know how many times they ran the ball?
Not a lot.
Well, Chandler,
Chandler
had
and Jones
carries.
Had 16 combined carries. They abandoned the run early in the game. And part of that is because they kept RPOing. You know, this is that run pass option where, again, Howell has the option to pull the ball. And frankly, there were a number of places where what they should have done is just called the run and said, we're going to run it. Don't pull it. They're sitting on the glance. They're trying to keep us throwing on the RPO. And I've been on the sideline before where as an offensive staff, we said that we basically came in and you know, where there's an RPO kind of thing always tagged onto this run. We tell the quarterback, look, when we call this, you don't have an option to pull this time. This drive, you're handing it off, period. And there needed to be some of that in this game because they did run it with some success at different points. Now the backs got into the second level a number of times and didn't break that tackle. And you can, I'm actually planning on one of the videos for this week. I want to look at, there's a particular run where it was a mirror of one of Javonte Williams' long runs last year. And the back this year, I can't remember which one it was, basically got into the same situation. Each back took a little bit of a hit to the leg. Javonte Williams broke that tackle at the second level at about 3 yards upfield and then turned it into like a 40 or 50 yard run. This year, he went down at 5 yards. That's a big difference. Now, the offensive line's job is to get you to that 3 or 4 yard range, and then your job as the running back is to earn your scholarship and turn it into 50. Well, that was another issue that, you know, Carter and Williams, like you said, they were elite. That they, when they did get to the second level, they made additional yardage every time. And we didn't see that as much here. We saw, okay, you get, you know, your 3 yards and then, you know, kind of go down. There was not enough of the second level wins for that group, but yeah, it was not a good performance on the offensive side from any position group, from the offensive line to Howell, to the running backs, to the wide receivers, to the offensive staff in terms of how they prepared and called this game. It was a bit of a debacle, and they're going to have to figure out, this looked like a team that didn't have an identity on offense. And they're going to have to figure out who they trust and to really go to that well. I mean, there were, how many times yesterday was there a drive where you're going, yeah, this time last year, this would be when they go to De'Ami Brown up top. How many times?
And actually, nobody was open.
Yeah. And actually there were two drives where I kind of talked over to my wife, who wasn't really paying attention, but sometimes I say something to somebody like, well, right about now, they need to go over the top here. This play. They've got it. And twice they did it. And on the one, Emery Simmons had enough space, but then his fundamentals broke down and he tried to go up the wrong way. And the defensive back got his hand in it. That's a touchdown last year. De'Ami Brown makes that play. And then there was another time where they called it and Howell didn't throw it because he didn't trust that either guy was open enough. So, you know, I didn't think they took enough over the top shots, period. And there were some cases where Virginia Tech had one-on-one press coverage. There's just a deep middle safety against the boundary. And I'm looking at that going, look, if this is how they're going to cover me, that guy on the boundary, the outside receiver, has to win that route. You've got to start throwing that vertical and making them and getting them out of that. And if they can do that all game, you're going to be in trouble. And they never really went at it. And it's one of those things where they obviously didn't trust that their guy would win that matchup. And you've got to win there. And Howell also, at different points, there were times where there wasn't much separation, but you can tell he's used to throwing to receivers who've generated a lot of separation. And the trust to be able to just let it loose and know that your guy is going to win that was not there. And that's another reason why he held on to it too long at different points, is there were times where he should have made the throw. He should have given his guy a chance, but he didn't feel like there was enough separation. And at a certain point, you know, this is actually a hard thing for young quarterbacks when they get to the NFL. You play for a good team in college and you're used to throwing to guys who are open. In the NFL, nobody's ever open. When you throw, they're generally not open. You have to throw them open and you have to throw it to a guy that and trust that that space is going to be there. And we didn't see that either. So, I mean, this was just it's not good all around on that offensive side of the ball.
Indeed. It will be hashed and rehashed. One thing for certain, and I'm going to do it for this show's purposes, is that those four that left are not walking through the door. So we're not going to keep discussing about if so-and-so did that, that would have happened. We, no question, things would look a lot different. And Carolina fans and us and me in particular assumed that things could roll on somewhat similarly, and that's just obviously not going to happen. Let me talk a little bit about Johnny T-Shirt, johnnyt-shirt.com. They are sponsors of this podcast, and they are great friends of Inside Carolina. You can get all your gear. You can get all the football gear you need. Of course, basketball is not too far off, and there are plenty of other Olympic sports that they support, both online and in-store on Franklin Street. Check them out. And if you're an Inside Carolina Premium subscriber, which if you want to read the message boards after a loss, they are certainly there for you to read them. There are plenty of good nuggets. Buck will have his usual up at some point, and all the coverage from Blacksburg and going forward is there. And, of course, the recruiting information is top-notch. Johnny T-Shirt, johnnyt-shirt.com. I also want to send a shout-out to Blue Shark Vodka. They are sponsors of our Inside Carolina post-game show with Ross Martin and Sean Drome. Look, these guys, Connor Barth and his guys, make a wonderful drink, and it would have been beneficial watching that one last night in Blacksburg. But take a chance on some Blue Shark. You got a cool little bottle that you can get with the Blue Shark in it. They've got the other bottle that's just straight for your enjoyment. Blue Shark, sponsors of Inside Carolina as well. Check them out. Look for it in any county in the state. Take care of that. And let National Guys pay the bills for the audio version. We'll be right back. This is the Day After Pod with Buck, Jason, and me.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, boys, let's talk about some positives that I saw. And one thing, and we didn't really talk about Josh Downs earlier. He's going to be a stud for this team. He's going to be the guy.
Until, nine catches yesterday, something like that.
I think 8 for 123. I mean, he was the only guy that was open that I saw with any consistency. So he might be the Michael Campanero for this Carolina offense, Buck. Shout out to that reference. But let's flip to the defensive side of the ball. And Jason, since I started with Buck on offense, I'll start with you on defense. Aside from the early, very early, I thought this defense played well, certainly played well enough to win the game. But Ja'Quarius Conley is just – I mean, that's one guy that read no press clippings, came in and played as well as we thought he might. Start with him, and then let's sort of break down this side of the ball, because it's easy to look at this game and think the defense was not any good and Rip Bateman and all that. Sure, they lost, but 17 and 300, you got to win those ball games. Jason, what'd you see?
Well, I mean, there were some – I thought there was a lot more positive defensively than negative in this game. There were some frustrating aspects of this, and some of that is just due to how how Virginia Tech called it. I mean, Virginia Tech called a great game to keep the defense off balance. And, you know, they did what they do. They, you know, tons of jet sweeps and throws to the perimeter to try to force you to defend the whole field sideline to sideline and really force you to handle the edge. And Carolina didn't set the edge as well as they needed to, and were, and they allowed too much yardage largely as a consequence of that. But a few things were real positives. And one is Conley was I mean, we all expected that Conley would be a good player this year. The question for me, I mean, I knew he might be a top five player on this defense, on the team this year, if he played to his potential. The question was, what would he look like at safety? What would he look like, you know, if he's asked to cover and some of those things? And for the most part, he looked like an NFL player at that position. He looked like a guy that belongs there and is going to be a force at that position. Now, he took some bad angles in a couple cases. He missed some tackles that were – there were a couple tackles that were brutal misses that, you know, should have been a third down stop in a couple cases. And guy went on to not only get the third down but make a play beyond it. So he's got to clean that up a little bit. But overall, I mean, you look at – fumble recovery, where he's in the pile handling his responsibility and making sure he's there, picks up the ball. That's a little bit of that is luck. The interception was a baller play. I mean, that's a guy that's a dude going out and making a play. Now, quarterback didn't put the ball on the spot, but again, you've got the guy in his proper space and finding a way to lay out and catch the football. I mean, this was big time stuff from him. This was a bit of a coming out party, and had they won this game, this certainly would have been, I think we would have all talked about this as a coming out party for both him and Josh Downs. But you know, I think he's found a good home where he is at that boundary safety. He gives them some flexibility. And I thought overall he was a revelation there. That's going to be a real positive for them this year on defense.
Buck, what'd you see? It was a little surprising, like I mentioned earlier, to see them get pushed around a little bit. And I thought they, you know, out-schemed Bateman's defense at times. There were guys out of position on more than one occasion. But, again, it's the end result for me, and I like what I saw in total. But your take on maybe starting at the defensive line, they played a lot of guys there. Some didn't get as many snaps as maybe I would like to see, but anyway, give us your expertise.
Well, there was some interesting use of the defensive line, and very early we saw guys like Javari Ritzy on the field.
And he made a play, made a play right, yeah, away, and tackle for a loss.
Right. I was surprised at that we would see, well, you know, we've heard great things about Javari all fall camp, but, you know, to see him, you know, making a play first half was interesting that they had that much confidence in him. And I think that bodes well for the season. I haven't gone back and counted, but they did use three down linemen a good bit of the time, more so than last year by a long shot or at any point previous under Jay Bateman. On that Conley interception, part of what caused that interception was pressure on Burmeister. And really, if defensively, it was a tale of two halves. Once Bateman and the defense sort of got a handle on what Virginia Tech was trying to do, they did find a counter for it. And the second half, I think maybe the total yardage for Virginia Tech in the second half was something like 70 yards. I think they had 220-some in the first half and 70 or 80 in the second half. So, you know, I think there's there's reason. If I was going to go out and order a shirt like Jason's wearing, that there's still hope. There's still hope because I think defensively they can get even better. And they've got some playmakers over there. And I think that's the difference between this team and a lot of the teams under Fedora. They may have had adequate players on defense, but they were all adequate. There was no studs. You know, there were no war daddies. There was nobody that was a playmaker. And there's several playmakers, I think, on this defense, which we'll see more of. And Conley stands out, but there are others as well. So that's my takeaway on the defense. And they did get better as the game went on.
Yeah, looking at the second half numbers here, Buck, you're right on. 93 total yards in the second half. 3.1 yards per carry allowed in the second half. That's getting it done as a defense. Two sacks, you know, the total plays, 27 plays, 3.4 yards per play allowed in the second half. That's a winning – I mean, that's not just a win. That's a suffocating defensive performance. If you allow 3.4 yards per play in a half, you have suffocated that offense. Now, unfortunately, if you look at North Carolina's offense in the first half, 4.2 yards per carry, and let's see, the total yards per play, 5.1. So not very good, but they didn't get suffocated the way that Virginia Tech did in the second half. And it's an interesting thing because of how the score and playing from behind and all of that kind of impacts impressions on some of this, because it didn't feel like Virginia Tech got suffocated that much in the second half, but they did. They basically got nothing done in the second half because they were able to adjust and guys made tackles and were in spots. Another thing that's worth thinking about, I brought up the sack adjusted. So removing sacks from the equation, total rushing yards average per carry from Carolina, which is 7.5. That's good. What do you think that was for Virginia Tech yesterday in terms of the whole game? Don't consider sacks. How many yards per carry did Virginia Tech manage yesterday?
3.0.
Close. Yeah, 3.5. Sack adjusted, you know, so not considering sacks, Virginia Tech averaged 3.5 yards per carry yesterday. So, I mean, this is not a situation where, you know, we talk about it as though Carolina got pushed around up front, and it felt like that at times. But then when you look at it and you go, did they? Not really. Now, the problem was that they kept giving up one play here, one play there. And the biggest issue that they had defensively is, I'm looking at first down efficiency. That's where this game was lost. And this was a big point of emphasis of us on the pregame breakdown and all of that, that they needed to be good on first down. The defense needed to handle Virginia Tech on first down, because Virginia Tech is an offense that depends on staying on schedule. Virginia Tech averaged 6.3 yards per play on first down. That was where the game was lost, on the defensive side. Now, North Carolina only averaged 4.3 yards per play on first down. That's where the game was lost on North Carolina's
side. That was in the first half, though. They did better in the second half, right?
No, this is total game.
Oh. And I think in the first half, if I'm not mistaken, Virginia Tech went 6 of 7 on third down.
Right.
And did not convert a single third down the entire second half. They finished 6 of 13 for the game. So they went 0 for 6 on third down the second half. Now, some of that could have been they tended to be more conservative in the second half. They went into the second half with a 14-point lead, so maybe they were playing a little bit more conservatively. But you know, certainly when North Carolina got it to 7-point lead for Virginia Tech, Virginia Tech had no reason to slow walk themselves down the field. So, I do think there were signs, at least, and more reasons to be encouraged about the defense. Got some concerns on offense. We need to get Coffrey Brown back and other things. But defensively, I think that part of the equation showed a lot of promise.
Yeah. This is a defense that, I mean, by and large, what we saw yesterday was the defense that I expected to see. And it's one that, as you're looking at it, it's one that you can expect to take further steps forward over the course of the season, because some of the guys that looked the best were some of the young guys. And, you know, we also didn't see Storm Duck out there.
Nope.
Right. So, I mean, this defense is going to get better as long as the young guys who are coming forward continue to develop as expected, and nobody, you know, goes down with a catastrophic injury, you know, knock on wood. This defense is basically what we thought they'd be in game one. You know, some hiccups, some young guys not quite always being in the right spot, some places where you're still getting pushed here and there, but, you know, and not being able to snuff things out on third and two, you know, and that's what gave us the feeling at times that they were getting pushed around, is third and two, and Virginia Tech kept getting those, you know, third and shorts. So at the same point, that's kind of what was expected. Now, moving forward in the season, as this defense develops, it's a defense that, you know, you can win a lot of games, and, you know, you could be a conference contender with the kind of defense that we saw out there last night. But you can't win anything if your offense isn't going to complement that better than they did. And, you know, this is where
you're not going to win many games in college football scoring 10 points.
No. Anymore. No, you're not. And, you know, and certainly not when you come out in the first half and you average 5.1 yards per play. You're not going to win a lot of games that way. So, you know, you've got to find, and what you said about Choffrey Brown, I think is a big part of this. The real question right now is, aside from Josh Downs, who's going to be a guy that's going to actually make plays on offense? Because, you know, the modern offensive game, and, you know, Buck, I know you've been on this train for 10 years. You know, you can't depend on 10, 11, 12 yard drives all the time, because modern defenses are going to get you off schedule generally, and you're going to wind up, you know, kicking a field goal or punting. And what you've got to have is a guy who can, you know, your back, who can, like Javonte and Michael Carter did last year, who can get a 4 yard carry and turn 4 yards into 40. You got to have a wide
explosive
receiver.
You got to have explosive plays, and they got none of those.
Other than Josh Downs. Yeah.
That first touchdown, Josh Downs went for, I think, 37 yards. That was their long play of the game.
And they're not going to win a lot of games this year. If your long play is 37, you're not going to win a lot of games.
And you have one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the last couple of years, they've led the conference, or been second in the conference, in explosive plays. That's how you win on offense. And the real question to me, and this is the concern moving forward, is when you look at this, who are the guys that are going to produce the explosive plays for you? Because, and again, that's Sam Howell's wheelhouse. That's what his strength is, being able to throw downfield and drop the ball in the bucket on some of those deep routes. Who are going to be the guys that you're going to be able to throw over the top to? Who are going to be some guys that you're going to be able to get some big plays out of? And this offensive staff has to figure that out real quick. They got to figure out, like, who's going to be the guy that we're going to give 50-50 opportunities for on those verticals when they're single covering us. Because you can't – I used to tell my offenses, if you look out there and you see press man, you know, if they're going press man and there's just a single safety in the middle, that's disrespectful. We got to win that. You can't let them do that and take that away. So one of you guys has to make a play, and quarterback, you got to trust them to make a play and put it in there. That's what I saw yesterday. Virginia Tech came out and said, you can't beat us here. And they were right.
Indeed.
Agreed.
That should end it, but I'm going to ask you, Buck, to end it. You talked about resetting some expectations in your column today. I think quite a few members of the fan base, including quite a few members of Inside Carolina, have significantly reset their expectations based on one game, which is never really a good idea. Talk to me about where you are now Of course, I had them 12-0, so I've already – I might as well just tear my bracket up like I usually do in the March Madness brackets. But where is this Carolina football team heading into Georgia State on Saturday?
Well, it's weird, right, because if you go back to 2019 – when North Carolina beat South Carolina in the opener there in Charlotte, everybody reset their expectations in the opposite direction, right? And North Carolina ended up 7-6. I don't think this is I've seen it, on the message boards, a thread title that this is now a 7-5 team. I'm going to have to see a lot more of some horrible play before I go as low as 7-5. 8, maybe. And I think the right answer, though, is where I started. I'm going to have to see more. Yep. And if you look at it, I think Lane Stadium last night was somewhat of a unique situation. You got 22 months, basically, they've not allowed fans into stadiums. That whole stadium was loud. They stayed to the end. Nobody went anywhere. They were all wearing orange. They were making a lot of noise. And I do think that crowd, to a certain extent, intimidated North Carolina. Knowingly or unknowingly, consciously, unconsciously, however you want to say it, it affected the way they played, everybody. At one point, the announcers were saying that Virginia Tech was the faster team. They played faster.
From the first snap, they sure did.
They played faster. I don't think they're a faster team, but they played faster because they knew what they were doing and where they were going, and North Carolina didn't on either side of the ball. So, I'm just going to have to see more before I make that kind of call in terms of 8-4, 9-3. I mean, whatever it ends up being, 7-5. I'm just going to have to see more. I will say, going back to the earlier point, I think it was on the Beat podcast. One of the maybe the Game Plan podcast, when they were talking about what sort of player North Carolina needs to recruit more of. And I think Jason was right on the money when we heard Taylor talk about the kind of quarterbacks that Alabama rolls out year after year. Think about the wide receivers they roll out year after year. And if North Carolina is going to move into, elite contending status at some point, they've got to get some of those elite receivers that, they can count on to get separation. They can count on to just blow the top off of the defense. You can just count on them everywhere. I think wide receiver is a position we could stand to recruit a little better than what we saw, especially on last night.
Indeed. We always talk about how these are so much more fun to do after wins, and they generally suck after losses, but we're always here to talk about it. There's been plenty of discussion, dissection. There will continue to be plenty of discussion and dissection. I think after the Virginia game in 2 weeks, we'll know a lot more, if not everything, about this team at that point. Because if I'm being totally honest, and I know that it's up in the air, I don't think that Virginia Tech team was very good. But they certainly outplayed Carolina. They certainly were better prepared. They certainly executed better when they needed to, and they got it done. And so they're fixable issues, but the deal with fixable issues is you got to fix them. And I think by the Virginia game, we'll see if those issues have been wrapped up. For Buck Sanders, for Jason Staples, I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. This has been the Game Plan, sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt. This has been the day after sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt, and also Blue Shark. Check them out. Thanks, boys.
Enjoyed it, guys.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.